Over the weekend, mediocre 49ers quarterback Colin Kaepernick sat during the national anthem. Why? Because he says he won't honor the American flag while it stands for institutional racism. He said, "I'm not going to stand up to show pride in a flag for a country that oppresses black people and people of color," said the man with a 78.5 quarterback rating in 2015 and an average annual salary of $19 million. He said, quote, "To me, this is bigger than football, and it would be selfish on my part to look the other way. There are bodies in the street and people getting paid leave and getting away with murder." And then he continued, "I am not looking for approval. I have to stand up for people that are oppressed." Let's leave aside the obvious hypocrisy of this BS. Kaepernick is one of the most privileged people in America. Let's leave aside the fact Kaepernick was adopted and raised by a white family. Let's leave aside the fact that Kaepernick began styling himself a civil rights hero right about the time he started absolutely sucking at his job, and that he was fined for yelling the N-word at another player in 2014. Leave aside the lies undergirding his perspective. America happens to be the best place on earth for people of color to live, including black folks, and the notion that cops are broadly targeting black men for death is statistically false. Let's focus instead on the NFL and the media. The left media have been paying continuous homage to Kaepernick's courage, which is amazing considering, if you recall, how they ripped former NFL quarterback Tim Tebow up and down for the crucial sin of praying before games. They say it's a wonderful exercise of First Amendment freedoms, and that anyone who criticizes Colin Kaepernick doesn't understand the First Amendment, which, of course, demonstrates absolute ignorance of the First Amendment, because no one argues Kaepernick isn't free to say what he wants. We just argue that what he's saying is disgusting and stupid. But he'll be dubbed a civil rights figure just for saying things while pulling down one of America's biggest paychecks. Meanwhile, the NFL itself has stood for St. Louis Rams running out on the field in the hands-up-don't-shoot pose, remember that was false, while refusing the Dallas Cowboys' request to pay homage to slain cops. The NFL, much like the rest of the sports world, has now been hijacked by the left. And so we'll see ESPN cover Kaepernick like a hero for taking action that demeans our veterans and our country. And we'll see the NFL pretend that Kaepernick is taking a real stand, as opposed to the kind of stand that earns him plaudits from pundits and quiet pats on the head from the NFL hierarchy. Perhaps the best response to Kaepernick's routine actually came via a Gold Star mom. She wrote, quote, "Mr. Kaepernick, I'm sitting in my living room looking outside at my American flag flying at half staff. You see, my son's body lay in a street after an IED blew up the vehicle he was fighting in. His blood stains the sands of Afghanistan. He died protecting the ideals of the flag you refuse to respect. He died so that ungrateful, privileged, arrogant men like you can be just that. Ungrateful, privileged, and arrogant. Shame on you for disrespecting my son and his life and his sacrifice." By the way, if you want to give to Gold Star Children, go to Freedom Alliance and you can donate in honor of true heroes rather than the false sports heroes the media and the NFL promote to prominence in their place. I'm Ben Shapiro. This is The Ben Shapiro Show. So first of all, welcome to our brand new sponsor, Birch Gold. So, you know, in times of economic uncertainty, they say this, and it's true, you should have some of your money, not all of it, obviously, you should have some of your money in precious metals, because with the government inflating the currency and with uncertainty in the future of the stock market, it's good to have something that's never going to be worth zero, the common currency that has always been the bedrock for exchange over the course of human history. Right now, the place you want to go to is Birch Gold Group. You can give them a call at 800-496-6663. They're the folks that I trust. They do have a long-standing track record of continued success. They do have an A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau, which means something because it's hard to get a good rating from the Better Business Bureau for some of these gold groups. Some of them tend to be kind of scammy. That's not Birch Gold. They have countless five-star reviews. Again, that A-plus from the Better Business Bureau. If you contact them right now, they'll send you a free information kit on physical precious metals. I think that's great. You should research before you invest on anything, particularly gold, so make sure that you check out all their information. It's a 16-page kit, and it tells you how gold and silver protect your savings and how you can legally move your IRA or 401k out of stocks and bonds and into precious metals, which, if you're worried about the future of the stock market, is not a bad idea. To get that no-cost, no-obligation kit, call Birch Gold right now at 800-496-6663 or go to birchgold.com/Ben. That's 800-496-6663. Or online at birchgold.com/Ben. Make sure that you type /Ben so that they know that we sent you. And that, of course, helps us continue to move the show forward because, obviously, they help sponsor the show, which means that all the useless people who otherwise would be homeless and living off your taxpayer dollars instead work for me hitting buttons. So, okay, there's so much to talk about today. We'll begin with the big news of the day. The big news of the day is that Anthony Weiner is now he is now the victim of separation from Huma Abedin. And the media are treating Huma as though she is the world's greatest victim. This is because Anthony Weiner, he sent pictures to some 40-year-old buxom brunette who was sending him pictures. She basically, it looks like she catfished him. Apparently, she's some anonymous Trump supporter, and she sent this information to the New York Post. And so there are pictures that look like this of Anthony Weiner. We have blurred out his aforementioned name, and that next to him is his kid, his 4-year-old kid who's sleeping there. And Anthony is lonely, so Anthony is tweeting out pictures of his junk to this 4-year-old brunette. And he's very obviously proud of his physique. I don't know why he thinks this is working for him, since he's now tried this several times in a row, and it's never worked out well. But he was texting his junk to people, and so that's what ends up happening. Huma Abedin, she immediately released a statement saying, "We're done here. I'm not with you anymore." And people are celebrating her. Oh, what a strong, wonderful woman for finally getting rid of him. Okay, I want to make a couple of points about this. Number one, all the people who are saying she's a strong, wonderful woman for dumping Anthony Weiner are the same people who say that Hillary Clinton is a paragon of strength for sticking for Bill Clinton, right? I mean, all the same people. And it was about time she threw that dog out. Okay, what Anthony Weiner did, just to point this out, what he actually did is have a funny name and text his junk at people. That's a lot less bad than Elliot Spitzer actually hiring prostitutes. It's a lot less bad than Bill Clinton actually raping people. But they still worship at the altar of Bill Clinton. He's a laughingstock because of his last name and because he's like an incompetent high school boy who thinks that if he text pics of his junk at girls that they're interested. Note to dudes, no girl in the world is interested in pictures of your junk. Okay, girls, it turns out, are not guys. They're not interested in pictures of guys' junk. If you think that's your, if that's your number one go-to mating move, you're going to end up sad and alone like Anthony Weiner. So that's point number one. Point number two, the media have decided to make Huma the victim in all of this. Okay, to a certain extent, she's a victim. She's a victim like Hillary was a victim of philandering in 1998. This is the third time this has happened. Okay, it's not like she didn't know that Anthony Weiner has this problem. Everybody in the United States knew that Anthony Weiner had this problem. And it's not like she then built her life to help out Anthony Weiner to help overcome this problem. She's been on the campaign trail with Hillary Clinton and working with Hillary Clinton for the last few years, you know, to much rumored effect. So everybody who's treating her like she's some sort of paragon of feminism and victimhood here, no, this is a business marriage to begin with. I mean, let's just put it this way, just final note on this. Any wedding officiated by Bill Clinton is not going to go well. Their wedding was legitimately officiated by a guy who's an alleged rapist. Okay, that's a pretty good indicator that the marriage is not going to go well from the beginning. You know, there are some other elements of the marriage that were kind of suspicious from the beginning. I mean, there's a woman who's a very observant Muslim, apparently, and she married a Jewish guy, which is really rare. But it's, in any case, the only person I'm really sad for here is the kid. I'm not really that sad for her. She knew what was going on. I'm not sad for him because he's a scuzzbag. I'm sad for the kid. And they pop out this 4-year-old kid, and now this kid has a divorced family, and that really is sad. That's really sad. So that's the latest on the Weiner news. What's amazing, by the way, the media are treating this as though the real story here is Donald Trump's reaction to it. Donald Trump said to the New York Times that this is a security risk because he could be blackmailed and Huma is working for Hillary, one of the most powerful women in America. And the media went nuts over this. I don't see why Trump is wrong on that. I don't. I really don't see why Trump is wrong. I mean, only I guess that now Hillary is blackmail proof, since no one cares that she leads her own sexual lifestyle, presumably, and Bill is stumping everything in a 300-mile radius, including tree stumps. Nobody cares about that anymore. But so she's blackmail proof. But Huma isn't, so I don't see why Trump's point is that bad. You know, there would it be possible in some world that Huma Abedin would be blackmailed over her husband's peccadilloes? Yeah, it's possible. Yeah, it's possible. We used to care about this sort of thing in America. Not anymore. Okay, so that's all I have to say on Wienergate 2016, so we'll just cut off that wiener. Okay, next we move on to what I think is really the big story of the weekend and really the big story of the last couple of years, and that is the resurgence of racial animus from the left. You know, we talked a lot about the alt-right last week, the kind of Trumpian alt-right or the Trump-friendly alt-right and what they stand for and this sort of white supremacist racial consolidation. And what I said is that it's a reaction, and it is. It's a reaction. It's a reaction to the racial solidarity of the left and the racism of the left. And the reason that that is so obvious is we'll start with Colin Kaepernick. I mentioned him at the top of the show. Here's Colin Kaepernick, that's 49ers quarterback, who really stinks, and he's sitting on the bench here. And he's sitting on the bench during the national anthem. Everybody else is standing. This, of course, makes big news. And then Colin Kaepernick explains himself in typical articulate style.
I mean, ultimately, it's to bring awareness and make people, you know, realize what's really going on in this country. There are a lot of things that are going on that are unjust. People aren't being held accountable for. And that's something that needs to change. That's something that, you know, this country stands for freedom, liberty, justice for all. and it's not happening for all right now.
Is this something that's evolved as a philosophy in your mind, and how has this kind of progressed that you make a stand like this?
It's something that I've seen, I've felt, wasn't quite sure how to deal with originally, and it is something that's evolved. It's something as I've gained more knowledge about, you know, what's going on in this country in the past, what's going on currently. These aren't new situations. This isn't new ground. It's things that have gone on in this country for years and years and have never been addressed, and they need to be.
Okay, what a hero, what a hero. And the media are treating him like a hero. He's just a hero, an unbelievable hero. ABC News has a column today by Ian O'Connor. This is from ESPN. And this ESPN, as I've said before many times, and as you know, folks, I'm always right, ESPN is just MSNBC with footballs. And ESPN is praising him. Colin Kaepernick stood tall while sitting down, which is not an easy thing to do. In fact, what he did in benching himself for the national anthem on Friday night was the hardest thing he could possibly do. The easy thing? That would be standing silently with his teammates on the San Francisco 49ers sideline, cutting against the grain of his conscience. Nobody would have known the difference. But he planted himself among the Gatorade buckets, understanding that in an age of 24/7 surveillance, he would be outed soon enough. He didn't strike the kind of dramatic pose made by Tommy Smith and John Carlos at the 1968 Summer Games in Mexico City, and that was okay. He made a statement loudly and clearly, and he said, "I'm not going to stand up and show pride in a flag for a country that oppresses black people and people of color." Right, black people and people of color, like Colin Kaepernick, who earns on average $19 million a year for being one of the crappier quarterbacks in the NFL. Again, that wouldn't be the end of the issue. I mean, there are plenty of people who have made lots of money. There are plenty of black people who were making lots of money in 1950 when Jim Crow was still a thing, right? Sammy Davis was making a lot of money in 1960 when Jim Crow was still a thing. But right now, Jim Crow is not a thing. And so now he's promulgating lies for the lapdog media. And the media are just lapping it up. They love this stuff. They love it. And there was somebody, I thought, who wrote an interesting column who said, you know, if you're booing him, you should really be booing Muhammad Ali, because Muhammad Ali did the same kind of stuff. If you recall, Muhammad Ali did take booze at the time, and he rightly took booze at the time, because he said some pretty evil and egregious things. I know we've made a hero out of Muhammad Ali now, because he became kind of this American spokesman later in his life, but early in his life, he was saying some pretty vile things about the United States and about the war in Vietnam. But at least back when he was doing it, there was actual serious racial discrimination happening on a systemic level across the country. That simply is not true. It was bad when he said it. Even then, it's simply not true with Colin Kaepernick now, right? I mean, this is all nonsense. The idea that police are out there just murdering black people, that's all they care about. They're out there killing black people and targeting black people. The criminal justice system is full of racism. You know, all of this is a lie, and we've discussed this about 1,000 times on the program, so no need to go through all the statistics again. I have full videos on this talking about all of these statistical anomalies that the left likes to cite and explaining where they come from. But Kaepernick, first of all, there's something cynical to this. Kaepernick is 5 seconds away from being cut by the San Francisco 49ers for sucking at his job. So he wanted to make this headline, and that way, if he gets cut, he can turn around and say, the real reason they cut me was not because I'm a really crappy football player. The real reason that they cut me is because I am such a standard bearer for Black Lives Matter. Okay, that's worth noting. But here's the thing about Kaepernick. Kaepernick represents the mainstream left. Him not standing up for the national anthem is actually what the mainstream left now believes. Isaiah Thomas, who was the GM of the New York Knicks, one of the worst GMs in NBA history, he said sort of the same thing over the weekend. He said that white silence is violence. This is his line.
I look at white silence in these issues as violence. White silence is the equivalent to violence in these issues.
First of all, silence is not violence. If silence were violence, then right now I'd be punching someone. Okay, but silence is not violence, obviously. But again, look at the people surrounding him, right? Max Kellerman is the guy who's sitting directly to Isaiah Thomas's left, the execrable Max Kellerman, the worst radio talk show host in America. And he's sitting there just nodding along. This is mainstream left thought. And athletes get celebrated for this, and they get ripped if they don't do this, right? If you sit there and you say something like, I don't think America's a very racist place. I think America's a pretty great place. Then you get ripped as a sellout. You get ripped as an Uncle Tom. If you do what Kaepernick did, you get praised by the media, sports and political both. Whoa, what a courageous guy. What a courageous guy. Well, funny, it's only courageous when the guy is earning $19 million a year for throwing a football. You know, it's amazing. Again, if you have the same guy making the same amount of money saying the reverse, which is actually true, that America is the least racist country in the history of the world, and that our cops are not out shooting black people but are largely protecting black people, that's why they're policing the inner city, then presumably you would be called a sellout and an Uncle Tom. Michael Eric Dyson, who's a racialist himself, I think he teaches at Georgetown, he says that black athletes should all do what Colin Kaepernick is doing.
Athletes must have enough courage to speak up. You got enough dough, you got enough social currency. Use your mouth to stand up for the very people who made it possible for you to become who you are.
The very people who made it possible for you to become who you are. So number one, the people who made it possible for Colin Kaepernick to become who he is are his white parents who adopted him and raised him. Okay, the people who made it possible for him to become who he is are the people who let him into a college where he could play ball, despite the fact that he probably didn't have stellar academic qualifications. The people who made it possible for him to do what he's doing are a lot of the people who are going to these football games and paying his salary who are largely white fans. The people who make it possible for him to be who he is are all the cops who are defending those games from terrorist attacks and criminals. Right, the first person that Colin Kaepernick is going to call when somebody tries to break into his house is the cops, just like every other person in the United States. But again, this is now mainstream left thought, and this is the point that I'm building up to, is that this is all part of a broader left. And people talk about the alt-right. The alt-left is the mainstream left. There is no alt-left because there's no mainstream left anymore. It's been totally hijacked by the Black Lives Matter racist movement. And you can see it, right? What Kaepernick says, the point I'm going to be making, is that what Kaepernick does here is fully in line with the Democratic National Platform. I don't know if you had a chance to watch any of the Video Music Awards last night, but we'll talk about that in just a second. This is why you need to subscribe so that you can actually see it, because the imagery does matter. DailyWire.com to subscribe. We've run out of time on Facebook Live as well as YouTube. DailyWire.com to become a subscriber. That's $8 a month, and you get to see me and my beautiful face. You get to see all the video clips. You get to see Beyonce half-clad, which is not every day, but it is today because she did that again. And there's also, if you want to join the mailbag, that's the way to join the mailbag. You go to dailywire.com and subscribe, or later, if you just want to listen to the show, iTunes, SoundCloud. We are the number one conservative podcast in America by leaps and bounds, and we are so happy that you've made that possible for us. All right, so Beyonce at the Video Music Awards. So nobody has actually seen the Video Music Awards. They've just been rumored. No one's actually seen them. We all watch the clips the next morning after there's controversy, but they may be mythical. We don't know the answer. Nonetheless, Beyonce decides that she has to make a stance. It's imperative that all of these black celebrities who have made all their money off white people buying their albums and going to their football games, it's imperative that now they make a big stand about how America's a terribly racist place. So Beyonce shows up, and she knows she's going to get plaudits from the media for doing this. She shows up at the VMAs with her entourage, and her entourage includes the so-called Mothers of the Movement. Now, the Mothers of the Movement, you may remember, were at the DNC. This is where the nexus begins to show up. They were at the Democratic National Convention, and they were campaigning for Hillary Clinton. And as you recall, the Mothers of the Movement include, right here, it's mothers of Michael Brown, Trayvon Martin, Eric Garner, and Oscar Grant. Oscar Grant is the only legit victim in this particular group. Mike Brown was a thug cop killer. He tried to kill a cop, and he was shot for his trouble. Trayvon Martin got into an altercation in which he was pounding a man's head on the pavement when he was shot. Eric Garner was resisting arrest and did not die because of the chokehold. He died because he was dramatically overweight and had a heart attack thanks to a suppression hold. Oscar Grant is the only one who was wrongly shot. And by the way, the cop actually did jail time for shooting him accidentally. He thought he was hitting him with a taser. Instead, he was shooting him. Right? There's a movie called Fruitvale Station about Oscar Grant. So she shows up. Beyonce shows up with the Mothers of the Movement. I don't know why the mother of Michael Brown should be celebrated in any way, shape, or form. She obviously did a terrible job with her son. Just the effect, you know, maybe unless he was a sociopath, if she had any hand in raising Michael Brown, she raised a bad kid. Okay? But she shows up anyway, and Beyonce celebrated. But that's not all Beyonce did. Beyonce also did this routine during the VMAs, where she had her dancers dress as angels who were then shot down, okay? And they're shot down. People thought that this was a reference to police violence against black folks. Singing, and there are people who are in white light, and then they're quote-unquote shot, and the light turns red on them and they collapse. Right, so this is her saying that police violence is terrible, police racism is terrible. And everybody is very into this, right? Beyonce gets all sorts of plaudits. She's really standing up for the things that are true. You remember a couple of years ago at the VMAs, she stood up for feminism by shaking her rear in scantily clad outfits. This is how she stands up for feminism. She did that again last night. At the very end of her routine, she had all of her dancers get together and form kind of a Busby Berkeley-style female symbol, right? The circle with the cross on the bottom. And this was supposed to be standing up for feminism. Really, Beyoncé's brand of feminism is wearing a thong and shaking her rear, which, if that's feminism, guys are into it. That was not the only thing at the VMAs. Alicia Keys, who also was at the Democratic National Convention. Again, you see the nexus here between the entertainment world and the Democrats. Alicia Keys was there as well. This was the 53rd anniversary this weekend of the March on Washington. And so that's an excuse for every artist to try and grab a piece of the March on Washington. Here's Alicia Keys.
If war is holy and sex is obscene, then we got it twisted in this lucid dream.
Oh no.
Maybe we could love somebody.
Wait, what?
Maybe we could care a little more.
Okay. Oh, happy day. So these are the folks who are making our politics happen. Okay, so the reason this is all relevant is because here's Hillary Clinton's statement, okay, about the 53rd anniversary of the March on Washington. Quote, in 2016, we've come a long way since the days of Jim Crow, but something is profoundly wrong when decades after Dr. King addressed the nation, so many Americans still feel that their country values them less simply because of the color of their skin. That's just one reason why the stakes in this election are unlike any we have ever faced before. Those brave men and women who marched and sat and bled for civil rights in America must not have done so in vain. I was unaware that we were going back to the days of segregation. I was unaware that we were relitigating Jim Crow. But according to the Democrats, we are. According to the Democrats, we're on the verge of the police reimposing Jim Crow because they're a bunch of racists. This is the part that's troubling. Kaepernick, Alicia Keys, Beyonce, Hillary Clinton, they're all part of the same viewpoint. And if Hillary had any stones at all, if she had any intestinal fortitude at all, Hillary would do what Kaepernick is doing, because clearly she believes the same thing. She believes America's a deeply racist place filled with institutional racism, and the flag represents that. Right? Kaepernick is just the extreme manifestation of what Beyonce believes. I'm sure if you asked Beyonce today, she would say she agrees with Kaepernick. If you asked Hillary today, she would say, I think we ought to stand for the national anthem, but I agree with his underlying concerns, right? Because she's a political actor. That's what she would say. But the bottom line is that this is what they believe. What they believe is that America is a deeply racist, nasty place that has to be punished, and the only way to punish it and bring it to heel is by giving more power to the same federal government that was responsible for a lot of that discrimination in the first place, or for overlooking it on the state level for a century. The Democrats are part of this giant lie that's being told, that America is a deeply racist, awful place, and they're pushing that. So every time you see the left mention the alt-right, they're not wrong about the alt-right, but understand, the left are the alt-right, they're just on the other side of the racial equation. They are the alt-right, they're just in favor of racial solidarity for minorities, but not for white people. I'm not for racial solidarity, period. I think racial solidarity is stupid. I don't think that you being born white, or being born a Jew for that matter, or being born black, I don't think any of this makes you a better person. I don't think any of it makes you a better person. But apparently the left does, and the left thinks that simply by dint of saying it, that America becomes a racist place. America is, again, the greatest place for black people to live in the history of the planet. I mean, honestly, look at any other place around the world and tell me where it's better for black people to live, where there's less racism than in the United States. Whenever people say Europe, they're neglecting the fact that literally black people get called monkeys at soccer games in Europe. Thierry Henry, this happened too routinely when he was playing soccer for the French national team. So it's you know, racism exists everywhere. But the level of racism in the United States is nearly negligible compared to that of other countries, and yet that's still no reason to stand up for the national anthem. Again, you know, there's also the idea of directionality here. People on the left think that America is headed in the wrong direction racially. For all their protestations about Jim Crow and how it's better than it was then, they think that there's no point at which America, the only way to declare America great is when America reaches utopia. People on the right understand that America is a great place, was founded in great principles, and that we're constantly working to perfect ourselves. Sometimes we do the wrong thing, sometimes we do the right thing. But in the end, the flag represents that effort and represents those central principles, which are correct. The left doesn't believe that. They think that those central principles were put in place by a bunch of racist old white men for their own political benefit. Okay, meanwhile, Hillary Clinton's campaign is still floundering. I mean, the polls are now tightening in a lot of the swing states. It's tied in Ohio. It's within three in Pennsylvania. It's very close in Florida. So the polls are beginning to tighten a lot. That's not a real surprise. It's mostly, again, people say it's Trump surging. It's not Trump surging. It's Hillary falling. Hillary keeps bouncing between 43 and 50, 43 and 50. Trump is stuck at 40%. He can't break it. But everybody hates both these candidates. But Hillary is still floundering, and she should be floundering. Here's Hillary over the weekend attempting to defend the Clinton Foundation.
My work as Secretary of State was not influenced by any outside forces. I made policy decisions based on what I thought was right.
Okay, so she says that she did all these policy decisions based. No, she wasn't bribed at all. There was no bribery whatsoever. I mean, sure, there's email evidence of bribery, but there was no bribery whatsoever. She says also she'll do her best to answer questions, which is why she hasn't had a press conference in about 37 years.
I understand that voters have questions. I'm going to do my very best to answer those questions.
Yeah, I'm sure she's going to do her very best to answer those questions, including the question, did you steal that from an American Girl doll, that particular jacket? The Democrats are doing their best to spin this away. Of course, Donna Brazile is the new head of the DNC, of the Democratic National Committee. And listen to her try and spin all of this away. It's pretty amazing.
We often criminalize behavior that is normal. And I don't see what the smoke is.
Okay, she says that we're criminalizing behavior that's normal. Now, she says she doesn't know what the smoke is surrounding Hillary Clinton. Quick point. Hillary Clinton is the one who said there's a lot of smoke here but no fire. So, yeah. So Hillary Clinton obviously sees the smoke. We're not criminalizing behavior that's normal. It turns out it's not normal to run your foundation as a slush fund so that you can hand out favors from the State Department. Even Andrea Mitchell, who's a very big fan of the Clintons, she says that it's going to be tough for the Clinton Foundation to wind down. This is a continuing problem.
Here's the pushback, and it's something that we really have to get on, because they say they're winding it down, but what I am told is it is really hard to wind this down. For one thing, Joe Scarborough asked her on Friday, why not just turn it over to the Gates Foundation? Mm-hmm. The Gates Foundation does not, they do grants. They don't do operations on the ground. Right. The Clinton Foundation does do. So maybe
yeah,
Robert
like
Wood
a VC
Johnson.
Type of thing.
And so there are different types of foundations. They have already accepted the whole health care component, which is one of the largest components, that will not be wound down. Chelsea Clinton is going to be on the board. They've been saying this for quite a while. That's not news. But the fact is that she is still going to be on the board to help wind this down.
But doing good work.
Let me just finish.
Not.
Bill Clinton just said that, to all of us in the press on Wednesday that they don't want anyone to be fired.
Right.
So it is going to be a slow wind down. It's not going to be wound down by the time, if she's elected, she takes
that's
over.
Not a-
Okay, so it's not going to be wound down. Again, this corruption is going to continue. If you think that Hillary's going to suddenly shape up, if she's president, that's a lie. Of course she's not going to shape up when she's president. Okay, with that said, what's happening on the other side of the aisle? Trump has had a couple of decent weeks. He's had some boo-boos, right? He had the whole Steve Bannon rollout, and Steve Bannon continues to be a walking trash heap of a human being. But Kellyanne Conway, who's his new campaign manager, she's not. She's good at what she does. And Trump has largely stayed on message, although he continues to shift on immigration. Today there was a rumor that his campaign had to deny that he was now going to throw away the wall and go instead with a virtual wall, which would virtually be 10 feet higher and be virtually paid for by Mexico. He then denied that, right? He says that that's not true anymore. No, the wall is going to be impenetrable. It's going to be an absolute barrier, impenetrable by everything up to and including Anthony Weiner. So that's exciting. But it's time for a little bit of Good Trump, Bad Trump, starring our good friend Brandon Snipes. Thank him again for the theme.
Trump, bad Trump, which one will we get today?
So today's a good day. Lots of good Trump today. Yay, actually. Some good Trump today. Okay, so we begin with Kellyanne Conway. One of the things I like about what Trump is doing now is he's starting to go into the black community and he's speaking things that are true. Now, granted, Donald Trump is the world's most terrible messenger. Okay? Donald Trump is a really crappy messenger for everything, not just on race. Just he's a bad messenger because he says things that are stupid, and if you don't take away his Twitter account, he starts tweeting things out in all capital letters and spelling like a child. You know, all these are bad things about Donald Trump. But he's doing something that Mitt Romney didn't. He's doing something a lot of Republicans wouldn't. He's supposed to now go into inner cities and start talking to the black community. So here is Kellyanne Conway explaining why he's doing that.
But Chris, I'm new to this post, and he's going to take this case right to people where they live. And that includes everyone. We're vying for every vote, every ethnicity, both genders, every age group. This is an American presidential election.
Okay, so Trump's going to take it to the people. Here's Trump explaining it himself. He's saying that he's going to do some black outreach.
Well, we're just talking about the fact that we have great relationships and the numbers are going up with the African-American community rapidly. We've had, you know, and I've always had great relationships with the African American community, and now, you know, I've made it such a focal point, mark Mr. Burns has been with us all the way, and he sees what's happening. He sees what's going on. But I've made it a very important focal point in the speeches themselves, talking about the little work that's been done by the Democrats for African Americans. They've done. They've been very disrespectful.
Yeah, that well, but Donald Trump is. You can't hear the audio that well, but Donald Trump is saying that he's going to be meeting with lots of black voters going into the inner city. I think that's a wonderful thing. I think that that's what Republicans should have been doing and should be doing now. They should also be going into the inner city, and they should be setting up job banks. They should be trying to create private alternatives to government. I've said for a long time, if you go to the inner city where there's a poor black kid and you tell that poor black kid, okay, I'm going to take you on a drive now. I'm going to take you from South Central LA to Beverly Hills. We're going to drive past these $4 million mansions. And you say to that black kid, that could be you one day. The black kid will probably look at you like you're crazy because he's been living in poverty. We're talking about an impoverished black kid. For that matter, an impoverished kid of any race. But particularly impoverished black kids who've been told by the media that America's a deeply racist place. If you say that can be yours one day, and all the adults they know are still dependent on government welfare, it's difficult to make that case. People are going to be in favor of the things upon which they are dependent. They are. And so if you are dependent on government, you're going to be in favor of bigger government. If you are a member of a teacher's union and you're in favor of it, then you're going to vote Democrat typically because the government pays your salary. The fact is that the vast majority of black people are not on welfare. The vast majority of black people are not on food stamps. The vast majority of black people are not impoverished, actually. But the subset of black people who are, you know, they are they believe that the government is there for them and private industry is not. One of the reasons for that is because of the high crime rate, so private industry doesn't go in and actually fix any of these things. Also, the government schools don't do anything to help people get out of these areas. I think it's now incumbent on businesses, I've said this before, it's incumbent on private businesses to set up actual outreach efforts in which we subsidize scholarships for black kids to go to school out at private schools outside of their local community, get them out of that crappy public school system. We go in there and we say to kids, look, if you get straight A's, we'll offer you an internship at this business that will pay you and will help subsidize your college education. We have to do all of the things the government lies and says it will, but we have to do it right. That would be, I think, a helpful outreach effort toward folks in the black community, particularly impoverished black areas. But I'm glad that Trump is doing this sort of outreach. So Chris Christie, he put down his shine box long enough to go on national television, and he says that you should vote for Donald Trump if you want a better life, and then he ate a donut.
I think what Donald is saying is that it's unacceptable to him that members of the African-American community, and I'm sure he will say this about other communities as well, who live in violence, who are the subject of that, or who do not have the educational opportunities that every child in this country should have so they can reach their fullest potential, that that's unacceptable. And what he's saying is that a Trump presidency will address those kind of things head on without caving into the special interests like the teachers union, which Mrs. Clinton has completely sold out to, reversed her position on charter schools, reversed her position on changing the way our urban education is run because she has sold out to the teachers union.
So you had no Donald problem with Donald that. Trump's language on that, on the reach out to the minority at all?
Listen, my view on it is that you have to look at what the message is. And the message is that if anybody lives in those circumstances in this country, that's something that the government should be working to try to change. And Donald Trump is not going to give in to the special interests in this country, like the teachers union, who say that substandard education in our urban areas can only be fixed by giving it more money, and that that's all they're going to do about it, not change the underlying problems that we have. On violence, we need to support our police officers and make sure that community policing becomes something that becomes the standard across the country. These are the things Donald Trump has talked about.
Okay, and of course, all of that is true. Okay, so that is good Trump. He's doing the right thing on that. Now it's time for a little, unfortunately, of bad Trump. Oh, no, Donald, don't do it. Yes, Donald grabbed the Twitter, and someone forgot to take it away from him. So Donald Trump, you know, in his obvious attempt to do outreach to the black community, decided it would be worthwhile to tweet. And this, of course, again, is it fair that the media are going to latch on to every bad thing that Trump does? No, it's not fair. It's also reality. It's also reality. Just let's face up to reality, folks. Everything that Donald Trump says that is bad is an admixture that is going to taint the rest of his campaign. And so here is Donald Trump tweeting about the cousin of Dwayne Wade. Dwayne Wade is a basketball player for the Chicago Bulls. His cousin was shot and killed walking in Chicago, so he tweeted this, quote, "Dwayne Wade's cousin was just shot and killed walking her baby in Chicago. Just what I have been saying. African Americans will vote Trump." All capital letters, vote Trump. So this is rather gauche. It would be possible for him to just cut this off after just what I have been saying. right? Or condolences, but this is why we need more law and order, or we need to make the lives of African Americans living in inner cities safer. Right? There are 1,000 ways to say this, and Donald Trump picks the worst because for Donald Trump, life is just a mirror that reflects his ambitions. So he says that Dwayne Wade's cousin gets shot. Don't worry, black people will vote for me. A few minutes later, somebody comes online and says, Donald, you need to do something that's not self-centered like that. Can you tweet again? So he tweets this. My condolences to Dwayne Wade. This is an hour later. My condolences to Dwayne Wade and his family on the loss of Nikia Aldridge. They're in my thoughts and prayers. Wouldn't that have been a better first tweet? Again, I don't think this is nitpicking because he's a presidential candidate and the man does have 11 million Twitter followers or something. So, but nonetheless, this is what the media have seized on to say that this just shows that Donald Trump doesn't care about black people. And you knew they were going to do this. You knew that they were going to do this. Al Sharpton did this routine. Al Sharpton, who is the worst race baiter in modern American history, he says that Trump isn't talking to black people. He's just using them as props.
I don't think he's talking to black voters at all. Why? Because if he was, he'd be saying, this is what I'm going to propose to you. To say to black voters, don't vote for the same thing, vote for something new, but never define what new is, means I'm really not talking to you, because otherwise I'd be selling you on, this is my new plan on economy, this is my new plan on health care. He's never, there's no blanks. If you notice yesterday, he met with some black Republican leaders, but he never walked out here and said, this is my blueprint for black America. Because I'm not talking to black America. I'm using the optics to talk to whites that don't want to tell their friends they would vote for somebody that's polarizing. So I want to increase their comfort level. So they become props to a larger narrative. And it's unfortunate and it's very cynical.
Okay, first of all, for Al Sharpton to talk about using black people as props is the height of irony. That's all he's done for his entire career, is use black people as props. Is treat the black community as a way for him to clear a lot of money and never pay the back taxes and never pay off all the lawsuits that he's lost and all the rest of it. But it gives people the credibility to do that if Trump makes silly mistakes. Again, I don't think it's fair to Trump, but it is the reality. It does show the double standard, however. I mean, black people use props all the time. I mean, Democrats use black people as props all the time. Hillary Clinton does it all the time. This is why she uses people of color as props all the time. It's why the father of the Orlando terrorist ends up in the background of one of her shots at one of her rallies, because she was looking for, let's get some brown faces behind me so that I look more diverse. Okay, all of that said, the media are totally unfair to Trump. They are. Joe Scarborough, who used to worship at the altar of Donald Trump, he has now decided that he's had it. He's not going to worship at the altar of Donald Trump anymore. Now it's important that he stands up to the great scourge that is Donald Trump, who he was licking his boots 5 seconds ago.
Amnesty Don. And a lot of people are calling him Amnesty Don.
People are saying it.
They're calling him Amnesty Don. Amnesty Don is, and that's what people
are calling
him. So
when you tweet, you do it for short.
Amnesty Don. Hashtag Amnesty Don.
Amdon.
For 14 months, Amnesty Don has been putting illegal immigration at the center of Amnesty Don's campaign. Right, John Heilman?
Oh, yeah.
And yet, nobody in Amnesty Don's own campaign can tell you what Amnesty Don's position is. After Amnesty Don won the primaries, promising to deport 11 million, telling Mika here, poor Mika, poor put upon Mika, telling poor put upon Mika here that Amnesty Don was going to get a deportation force. But now Amnesty Don.
I thought he was kidding.
It's softening.
Oh.
Right? So now Amnesty Don this weekend, even Amnesty Don's own people, surrogates, don't know what Amnesty Don's going to do on this. What?
Or when.
So sort through Amnesty Don's statements on immigration and tell us what you think Amnesty Don's going to do.
Okay, so Joe Scarborough obviously thinks that he's funny because he keeps saying Amnesty Don over and over while looking like Beepker from The Muppets. But when he does this routine, look, Trump has flipped and he's flopped. And I made fun of him last week for flipping and flopping and flopping and flipping. He has more waffles than a pancake house. But that said, you know, this whole routine where he's now Amnesty Don, as opposed to Hillary Clinton, whose actual position is amnesty for everybody, plus let's let in 5 billion more people, it's worth pointing out the contrast. That show has turned into, it's amazing how like, they're kind of, you know what they are, Joe and Mika? They're the vindictive PTA couple. There's always one couple in PTA where they got screwed one time because they got stuck with doing the bake sale, and now they're just pissed at the world, and so they're going to take it out on everybody. So Joe and Mika were the biggest Trump boosters ever, and then Trump smacked them, and then he tweeted about how he knew about their sex life, basically, which has to be weird. And she and now they're both on board with each other, and they sort of gaze at each other and kick each other under the table when they're not being sufficiently nasty about Trump. So Mika Brzezinski decided to get in on the act as well.
I'm not saying you should talk to someone in the mental health community for a diagnosis on the air. That is never what I meant when we had this conversation.
Right.
But I, at this point, I have been asked so many times that I think it's worth asking someone in the mental health community if this is someone you'd want to look, that this is, are these signs of something that perhaps could lead to
a
diagnosis?
You know what? I think
we've
there's
seen
a
enough
way.
Of him.
I think
it's
there's
repetitive.
A way for
it's
us.
Consistent.
I think there's a way for us to bring on mental health professionals, describe certain traits in people, and then have them talk about, like...
I think we're there.
Okay, we're there. Okay, it's time for us to bring on psychiatrists to examine Donald Trump from afar. I will just make one quick point here. The Democrats, last I checked, were complaining incessantly about Sean Hannity bringing on medical professionals to speculate about Hillary Clinton's health. Right, for the past couple of weeks, that's all we've been hearing. How dare the right-wing media speculate about a little old lady who looks like she has to have a stool to get up into an SUV and wears muumuus that are straight off the rack from landing from the tent place down the street. She looks like, I mean, Hillary literally wears clothes that looks like she went to Skid Row in Los Angeles, beat up a homeless person, took his tent, and recarved it. That's what she looks like lately. And she looks like she's been bloodied in that fight. Like, it didn't go that well for her. And so if people speculate about her health, the media, oh, how dare you speculate about Hillary's health. I think it's stupid to speculate about Hillary's health. I also think it's worthless to speculate about Trump's mental health. I mean, listen, I think Trump's a dumb, too. I don't think he's a particularly stable dude. But the idea that they're going to get a psychiatrist on to examine Donald Trump from afar, and that's okay. So you can insult his mental health, but you can't talk about the fact that Hillary Clinton looks like she's going to fall over and croak any second. You know, that's a big no-no. You can't mention that at all. I mean, after all, we saw her open a pickle jar, so that solves everything. So the media have—now the media is out in full display. They've decided that it's important that Donald Trump lose, which they already thought, but now they're going to sink their own credibility in ensuring that he loses. Okay, time for some things I like and then some things that I hate. It will be an epic Things I Hate edition, courtesy of someone in this room. So, things I like. We're going to do this week great movies with crappy scores. So this is a very specific subclass of movies. So we begin this week with The Princess Bride. So The Princess Bride is a great movie with an unbelievably crappy score, and I wish to God somebody would go back in and take out the synthesizer crap and just put in, like, a real classical score. It would be really great. You know, there not the guitar theme, that's mediocre, but all of the stuff where you've got the synthesizer playing underneath Prince Humperdinck's speeches. The movie's fantastic. It's a great, great movie. But the score is awful. But we'll play the trailer anyway. This is, of course, a movie that if you haven't seen it, it's inconceivable.
Grandfather's here.
Sit. He'll pinch my cheek. I hate that.
Maybe he won't.
Hey, how's this sick? Huh? I brought you a special present.
What is it?
It was the book my father used to read to me when I was sick, and I used to read it to your father. And today, I'm going to read it to you.
It was a time when life didn't seem so complicated.
Marriage is what brings us together today.
What?
What? What?
I'm killing myself once we reach the honeymoon suite.
Wouldn't that be nice, hmm?
A courtly age of gentle conversation.
I will always come for you.
But how can you be sure?
This is true love.
Oh, no. Is this a kissing book?
No. Actually, there was a lot of treachery, peril, and revenge.
Prepare. Movie, you're illiterate, but it's a great movie. But I mean, listen to the underscoring just for the trailer, and it's like Kenny G is in the background rocking out to Manny Patinkin's Hair. So they really should go back and redo the score. It's really quite terrible. So we'll do some more of those movies this week. Great movies with really, really crappy scores. Princess Bride is number one on my list. Okay. Time for some things that I hate. Let's do it. Right, intense. Okay, so a few things that I hate. First of all, Kanye West is still taken seriously by people, and I don't know why. I mean, after you marry Kim Kardashian, haven't you waived any claim to being taken seriously as a human being? But nonetheless, he went out of his gourd again at the VMAs. Again, I'm not sure who's even seen this. I've heard it reported on, but I'm not sure that anybody's ever watched the VMAs or that it exists. Here is Kanye West making an idiot of himself. This, of course, is a fellow who is well-respected in the Democratic community because he's stupid.
Later tonight, Famous might lose to Beyonce, but I can't be mad. I'm always wishing for Beyonce to win, so... You know, just to put the audacity to put Anna Wintour right next to Donald Trump. I mean, like, I put Ray J in it, bro. Like, this is fame, bro. Like, we came over in the same boat. Now we all in the same bed. Well, maybe different boats, but, you know. But if you think about last week, it was 22 people murdered in Chicago. You know, when you're a senior and it's like the last month and you just don't feel like doing any more work, if you feel like you're seeing people dying right next to you, you might feel like, what's the point? What's the, you know, like life could be like, start to feel worthless in a way. Like, I know times for me, I sit down and talk to older, like rich people, you know, aka white, you know, but my role models are artists, merchants. There's less than 10 that I can name in history. Truman, Ford, Hughes, Disney, Jobs, West.
The words of Abraham Lincoln, everybody. So Kanye West, considered a cultural figure. We deserve everything that we get. Okay, other things that this one I actually like. I hate it, but I like it. Jill Stein, who's the Green Party candidate and legitimately the craziest person in this race. I mean, I said a minute ago we shouldn't cast psychological aspersions at people running. I make an exception for Jill Stein. Actually, you know what? I make an exception for all four of them. Wave it. They're all crazy. So Jill Stein of the Green Party, she actually tweeted this over the weekend. You ready for this? This is amazing. It's a picture of Harambe, the gorilla, right, that was killed 3 months ago. And it says, the killing of Harambe 3 months ago today reminds us to be a voice for the voiceless. Oh, it makes me want to vote for her so much. It's so spectacular. I don't even know what to say about that. It's so great. Okay, so a few things. Number one, Harambe was a gorilla that dragged a three-year-old child across a pond. Second of all, Jill Stein wants to, like, abort babies 8 years after they're born. Like, she's willing to abort me now. Like, she's voice for the voiceless. Goodness gracious. And also, using Harambe as your example of a voice for... Like, there are actual innocent people being killed all over the world. Using the gorilla from the Cincinnati Zoo as your case. Like, if that's not trolling, if that's serious, that is spectacular stuff. I'm hoping... And she put out a full statement, so apparently it's serious, that she really thinks that the killing of this gorilla at a zoo is the epitome of human cruelty and violence. Like, never mind the tens of thousands of people being murdered in Syria, being gassed to death, literally. Never mind the women who are being forcibly raped by ISIS. Harambe the gorilla was killed at the Cincinnati Zoo. And as a fan of Harambe the gorilla, I can't argue. I think Harambe is in heaven fighting Cecil the lion. And I think that this is good for Jill Stein for really speaking truth to power. Okay, other things that I hate. All right, so Comedy Central did a roast of Rob Lowe. Rob Lowe is reportedly kind of conservative. So for some reason, Ann Coulter shows up at this thing. And, you know, I've been friendly with Ann for years and years and years. And Ann just gets destroyed at this Comedy Central roast. They say it turned into the Ann Coulter roast with Rob Lowe. And some of the jokes they told were really wild. I mean, things that you would never be able to say about somebody on the left if you were a woman. But they said it all the time. They say this stuff about Anne, and everybody just sort of, oh, well, you know, they're allowed to say it. So Peyton Manning says, I'm not the only athlete up here. As you know, earlier this year, Anne Coulter won the Kentucky Derby, right? Which is, you know, relatively weak tea. But lots of jokes about her looks. Rob Lowe said, after seeing your set tonight, we've seen the first bombing you can't blame on a Muslim. Nikki Glaser, who's apparently a comedian, she said, the only person you will ever make happy is the Mexican who digs your grave. Jewel, who last I checked was cutting like children's songs because no one remembers what she does anymore. She says, I do want to say as a feminist, I can't support everything that's been said tonight, but as someone who hates Ann Coulter, I'm delighted. And Ann Coulter emailed. She said, "Everybody has such thin skin. Bless their hearts. They were trying to be funny." Okay, so Ann, you know, does have a thick skin, so she can handle it. But it is amazing that some of these jokes are things that if they were said about a lefty woman, this would be considered sexism. It's said about Ann Coulter, and because nobody likes Ann Coulter because of her position on immigration and because she says offensive things, then that's perfectly acceptable according to the left. The double standard is rather telling. Okay. One more tape of a thing I hate. So this is actually a thing I like. There's a New Jersey transit cop, and he saved this guy. And here's the tape of him saving this fellow. So this guy wanted to kill himself, and he was on the railroad tracks, and he's trying to drag this guy off the tracks. And here comes the train, gang, so you better hurry it up. Right, you can see the guy trying to pull himself back onto the train tracks. He pulls him off, and boom, there comes the train. Oh, wow. So, good job by the cop there. The only reason that I'm playing this as a thing I hate rather than a thing I like is because I can't tell the race of the guy he's trying to pull off the tracks, but I'll bet you the cop didn't care. The cop was apparently of Hispanic descent, that's what cops do. Cops save people. Cops are there to save you, whether you're black, you're white, you're green. It doesn't matter to them. They're there to save people. But don't worry. The cops are the bad guys. The cops are the ones that we really should worry about. He's the one who, by the way, is risking being pulled back onto the tracks by this guy. I mean, look, the guy's trying to pull him back onto the tracks and kill him too. And there he is, saving the guy from being hit by this oncoming train. So just remember, that's what cops actually do. Okay, this also is this is actually just funny. There's this guy who, there's this woman, this feminist woman, who got very upset with a Lyft driver, like Uber and Lyft. This Lyft driver is a, it's pretty, do we have the audio of this?
Yeah, we have it.
Yeah, we have it. Okay, so there's this Lyft driver, and this woman is very, very, very upset with the Lyft driver because the Lyft driver has one of those hula girls on the dashboard, you know, that's not sexist because it's just a toy. And this feminist gets very, very upset at the Lyft driver and things go wildly wrong.
You thought that was adorable. You didn't think about, like, the pillaging of the, like, continent of Hawaii.
It's not a continent, gang.
Oh, you didn't? Okay, so you won't get rid of the doll then? Because that was, like, really cute thing that you found at Goodwill.
No. I'm not gonna get rid of it because I just don't realize it was a...
But so obviously, like, you as, like, a white male, you were, like, the least, like.
But now you're judging me. You're assuming where I'm from.
No, I'm not. I'm not judging you. I'm just saying, like, that perhaps, like, you might be the person who is least hurt in this situation. I'm a passenger in your car. Like, that doll is offensive to me. But you don't want to take it down because you, like, found it at Goodwill and it was, like, a good find. Yeah, no, I do want you to because it's actually deeply offensive. No, I do want you to take it down.
Okay, so it goes on like this for 5 minutes, and finally the guy just pulls over and says, "Get out! I've had enough of you. There is no amount of money in the world that you can pay me via Lyft that will justify this particular car trip." And it just demonstrates. I mean, seriously. If you get into a car and the first thing you think is, oh, that hula doll on the dashboard, that's cultural appropriation from the continent of Hawaii, then you deserve to be let off on the side of the road, and it doesn't matter where the road is. It could be like in the middle of a dark forest, and you deserve to be let off on the side of the road. Just awful. And that's what a lot of these social justice warrior feminists are like. Again, it's not her car, gang. It's not her car. Like, she says, I got in your car and it's offending me. Okay, so get out of the car. No one said you have to be here. I like he says at one point, well, fine, so you'll give me a 1-star review, but, like, I'm not taking it down. And he's like, no, I want you to take it down. I think it's offensive. Like, okay, then get out. So everybody needs to calm down a little bit. The hula girl on the dashboard is not offensive, and if you think it is, then you're the one with problems. Okay, final note of the day, things that I hate, and I will make no additional reference here. So I think that there's a basic reference to Huma and Anthony Weiner. Folks, just general life rule, general life unsolicited advice. After you break up with someone, do not be friends with your ex. Do not be friends with your ex. It's a waste of time, and it's stupid. It's really stupid, particularly for girls. Because, ladies, I'm just going to give you a piece of advice from a guy. The only reason that guys want to be friend with you after they break up with you is because they're thinking of you as the backup option. Okay, that's just the reality. It's not because they value you as a human being. It's not because they love you. If they loved you and valued you as a human being, they'd still be dating you, right? It's because they want you there as a backup option in case things should go wildly wrong and there's nuclear war and you end up as the last two people on Earth. That's why a man stays friends with his ex. Guys, the girl is staying friends with you out of pity. She's not doing it because she wants to be with you. She's doing it out of pure pity because she feels bad for you and she thinks you're a loser. Okay, the fact is, the world is full of wonderful people. If you dated one of them and now you want to go back to being friends, too late, you blew it. You should have thought of that before you started dating the person. I understand there are people who have lifelong friends like this. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying you've made terrible decisions with your life. That's all I'm saying. So, okay, and one final note, as an extension of this rule, in life, I think that you should make a clear distinction in your own mind between the people who you're actually close to and the people who you pretend you're close to. Okay, for me, I'm close with my family, and I'm close with, like, a friend. Okay, everybody else, most people, they say, oh, I'm friends with this person. What they really mean is I'm friendly acquaintances with this person. Okay, the person wouldn't help you move, the person wouldn't drive you to the airport, and the person wouldn't mourn for you if you died. Or if you died tomorrow, the person would be like, oh, God, that's terrible that Bob died. That's so sad that Bob's dead. I don't know what to do about that. Well, guess you got to go to work. Catch you later. Right? If your family dies, if an actual close friend dies, think about, this is kind of morbid, but, you know, screw it, we're at the end of the show. Thinking about life in morbid ways is a good way of distinguishing what's real from what is fake. So if you think about somebody and you're actually, and the idea of them dying is actually horrendous to you and would break you up for a year, that person is actually your friend. If it would break you up the rest of your life, that person is actually family. If it would break you up, like, until you get lunch, then that person is just a friendly acquaintance. And I only say this because there are a lot of people, particularly young people who are single, who take friendship as though friendship is the be-all, end-all. Friendship is not the be-all, end-all. You see people say, well, I'm dating a girl, and she doesn't like my friends. I don't know what to do. Well, it depends. Do you want to marry the girl? If you want to marry the girl, your friends are less important. Okay, it's just the way this works, because now she's your family, and your friends are secondary. And all those people you think are your friends, in 5 years, you're not going to be talking to any of them. And it's particularly true for the people I'm talking to who are now in high school and junior high. We're going to sign each other's yearbooks at the end of the year. You're going to say, we're best friends forever. We're going to talk every day. No, 3 minutes from now, you're never going to talk with this person again. As soon as it hits summer, you're not going to remember their name. It's going to be gone. Find the people who you want to be close with. Spend time in life with those people. Don't waste time on the people who are friendly acquaintances beyond just what is fun for you. But don't turn fake friendship into real friendship, and don't turn friendship into family, because they're not the same thing. Okay, that's dark and morbid and horrible, but don't worry, there's more where that came from tomorrow. I'm Ben Shapiro. This is The Ben Shapiro Show.